Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters with your host, Betty Jo Tucker, author of Confessions of a Movie Addict, right here at www.blogtalkradio.com.
Hi, all you movie fans out there. Thanks so much for joining us today. You don't have to be a movie addict to visit here, but if you are one, it's definitely the place for you. I'm your host, Betty Jo Tucker, speaking to you during this first week of February 2011. We have a packed show for you today, folks, and a very interesting one, for we'll be hearing from award-winning actress Judy Reyes, as well as from Melissa Silverstein, creator of the terrific Women and Hollywood website, and co-founder of the exciting new Athena Film Festival. Judy's interview is pre-taped, so we'll play that later on in the show. But Melissa is with us right now. Hi, Melissa. Welcome
Hi.
To Movie Addict Headquarters.
Hi, great to be here.
Well, we're very glad you could join us today. I know how busy you are, considering that the film festival you're working on begins on February 10th. So I'm going to call on our co-host, Jazz Show, to get started with your interview right after I thank Demos Yannikos for handling our chat room until Nikki arrives today. We really appreciate our chatters as well as all our other listeners, and we hope everyone enjoys the show. So, Jazz, it's your turn now to say hi to Melissa, and you have the honor of asking her the first questions.
Well, it's going to be a busy day, so thank you for coming, Melissa. It's a joy to have you here.
Great.
Because people may not be aware of everything that you've been doing so far, give us a little bit of background first. Why did you decide to create Women in Hollywood website? What motivated you, and when did that start?
The blog started back in 2007, and it was really just created for me to have an outlet to talk about my two favorite issues, which are pop culture and feminism, and I realized that there was a big void in those kinds of conversations online. I discovered blogging, and I thought because I had expertise in both areas that my voice could lend something to the conversation, and now I'm 3 years in, and we just got moved over to IndieWire, so we have going to have a much broader audience to discuss the topics of women and Hollywood.
Can you relate the two for us? I mean, you know, what's a typical example? Is it more of how feminism shows up in movies, or is it how art and culture affect the feminist movement in society?
It's kind of neither one of those. The way I look at women in Hollywood is kind of my whole world perspective is informed by feminism, and so it's kind of how I look at the entertainment that is provided for me in the world and helps me make decisions about what I want to partake in. So it's really kind of a sensibility of how you look at the world. So, for example, I wrote today about the new statistics that just came out from San Diego State University about the lack of women in leadership positions in the film business. And these are statistics that have, you know, not changed for the last decade. Yet there is no impetus in the business to have more women in these kinds of positions, directing, producing, editing, cinematography, et cetera. I believe that our culture, I believe it's a cultural crisis. Women are 50% of the population. We buy 55% of the tickets, yet there seems to be no outlet for women's voices and visions in the kind of mainstream Hollywood films. So those are the kinds of topics that I approach and how I approach it, and really just trying
good
to create
you.
A conversation that gets people talking about these issues.
Well, good for you. We thought, you know, last year when Kathryn Bigelow got the Oscar as Best Director for The Hurt Locker, we thought, okay, the glass ceiling or the celluloid ceiling or whatever it is might have been broken. But now here we are this year with some brilliant women directors who didn't receive any nominations, and so I'm so happy with the work you're doing, because I think it's really worthwhile and it's necessary to call attention to this. I go to your site because I just am fascinated by all of the interesting things that I find there, but I was disappointed with one of your posts, recent posts, when you said that the Wonder Woman reboot is not going to happen. Is that
the
case?
No, it actually is. I did a new one. It actually is going to be picked up.
Yay.
I did a new one, and yeah, David Kelly's version is now in the pipeline at NBC under its new management. So, you know, we shall see.
Is that the same? Is that David E. Kelly, the same one
that
from Ally McBeal
David
and all
e.
that?
David E. Kelly, yes, correct.
Okay. Huh.
Oh, I can't wait. I wonder who's going to play Wonder Woman.
I have no idea.
You know what? This is burning through pretty quick, Betty Jo. Let's just double back real quick, because just one more question, Melissa, because you mentioned something fascinating to me. Women buy, I think you said, 55% of the tickets from your post for movies. And as Betty Jo, I know, mentioned to you off air at one point, I work in politics. Women actually cast 52% of the votes in politics, and yet they still occupy a very small space in leadership positions in the political field, and apparently they occupy a smaller than would be expected space in the industry. Did you offer any explanation for why that still is in 2011?
Well, I actually have worked in politics. I helped start the White House project over a decade ago, so that's also kind of where my thought process about this comes from, because I have seen, you know, the need for women in leadership in politics. But I think the problem is it's hard to really articulate aside from other than sexism and not wanting to share power. Women buy 55% of the tickets now. We don't know exactly how many of those tickets are, say, for example, for a family film, because they're bringing, you know, kids, or are they buying the tickets? Are they buying the tickets for their partner and them to go see the movie? So women buy the lion's share of actual tickets, but it's kind of like, what movies are they going to see? And clearly what they're going to see are not movies that are directed by women, since only 7% of those movies are directed by women.
Yeah, that's a terrible statistic, but it's how true and how sad that it is true. But I think you have something like correcting this in mind with the new film festival that you're co-sponsoring with Barnard College, the Athena Film Festival. What can you tell us about this festival and the award recipients and some of the films that you have scheduled?
Well, the Athena Film Festival kicks off next Thursday, February 10th, with an awards reception, and we're just thrilled to have a variety of women on campus to accept Athena Film Festival awards, and some of those people include Greta Gerwig, the actress, Anne Rossellini, the writer and producer of Winter's Bone, Deborah Granick, the writer and director of Winter's Bone, Delia Ephron, Leslie Bennett from Vanity Fair. I'm not naming everyone because I won't remember everyone. Nancy Schreiber, a cinematographer. Anne Thompson, who is also a blogger on IndieWire. Tanya Hamilton, a director, who did the great Night Catches Us this year. Abby Disney and Ginny Rediker, who did the great documentary Pray the Devil Back to Hell. And Chris Hedges, who's been a documentarian for decades, who's done fantastic movies. There are 13 of them. I don't know how many I named, and I apologize for leaving anyone out. But we really wanted to...
Oh, wow. I am so glad you're honoring the people responsible for Winter's Bone, because that film made it to my top 10 list of the year. And it was also the film that we named the best of the year at the San Diego Film Critics Society. And we also awarded Jennifer Lawrence the best actress for her role in that film. So you're really right on target as far as
that. And we will be
that
showing
is.
That movie, too, and doing a Q&A afterwards with the director and the writer. What we want to do is we want to set the tone to talk about why we need more women in leadership positions in the film business. all weekend long, we're screening about 25 films that highlight women in leadership. And it's got women in political leadership, so Jazz, you should come down and see some of these movies. Like, for example, a documentary on Benazir Bhutto. There's also a documentary on Shirley Chisholm. There is a great sports movie called The Mighty Max. We're also, straight from Sundance, The Misrepresentation, the documentary that focuses on the lack of women in media is coming in. So, I mean, there's 25 great films that are talking about women in leadership. The films are directed by men and women, but at the center of the film, the core of the film, is a woman in leadership in her community and in either in politics in her community or in the world.
Now, Melissa, how much of that is money? I wanted to ask you, because last year I got a wonderful chance to briefly interview Jennifer Westfeldt, who did, along with her partner, Kissing Jessica Stein, which is a great indie film. And she mentioned that it's not really, she didn't feel it was a dearth of women with great ideas, with great scripts and everything, but when they go to producers and that aspect of the business, trying to get the funding to get a big screen film going, that sometimes they get turned away, even though the projects may have as much merit. Have you had any experience with that?
I totally agree with you. I mean, the issue is not that there are not women directors out there and women writers. There are. They're everywhere. They write to me all the time. The problem is the machine of Hollywood is so focused on opening weekend. It's so focused on those dollars. It's so focused on kind of the action blowing up type things that automatically kind of go into the male sphere, whether it should they should go into the male sphere or not, or they shouldn't. So guys get to direct these movies. These are the movies that, you know, keep Hollywood going. Then you see a movie that, like A Winter's Bone, that's made for under $2 million. It's made almost $10 million, so it's clearly a huge hit. But those numbers don't register in kind of main Hollywood because it's like, oh, $10 million, what is that?
Compared to Avatar, right?
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Nothing.
This is about kind of what we value as a culture in our entertainment.
Exactly.
And women's, the things that women are drawn to, the stories that women are drawn to, the stories that women want to tell are valued less. And so then, in turn, when women, you know, go and want to purchase tickets, A, they're not available in the Cineplex because you look up and you only see, like, you know, seven of the same movie. And B, because our culture values them, men feel okay to say, no, I don't want to go see that chick flick. You know, that's a girl movie. Whereas a woman would never see, oh, I'm not going to go see that guy flick, because the guy flicks are seen as the norm. And the women's movies are seen as other. That is how we look at women and film.
Well, congratulations on taking on this this subject, and I just I hope that your film festival is a big success. And I know that you have to. You're so busy. You have to get back to work on the film festival. So I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us. And I want to urge all our listeners to check out your womenandhollywood.com website, because when they can also click on the Athena Festival.
Right. Can I give an updated address? Because I'm on IndieWire now. So it's
Do that, please.
blogs.indiewire.com/womenandhollywood. But if you
say
go to IndieWire,
again,
you can find it. And then athenafilmfestival.com. And we have several movies that are free. Real Women Have Curves and Mo are free. Tickets are $10, $5 for students. It's going to be a great weekend where you can talk to people about film and women and leadership, and we hope that everybody comes out.
Well, we hope that you have many, many, many people who come out, because it's a wonderful project and you've got a great lineup of films and award recipients and discussions. So best of luck to you and your colleagues, and keep us posted. But we know that you have to leave now, so we're going to say bye for now, and good luck with your exciting project.
Thank you guys so much. Bye.
Bye. What a pleasure to hear about a project like that, Jazz. I mean, it just sounds like something that's going to help with the problems that Melissa talked about. And
just sorry that they've got the film festival scheduled for the exact same time as CPAC, which is the biggest conservative political convention of the year in D.C. But yeah, that does sound exciting.
It does. And so, again, I urge listeners to check out the Women in Hollywood site and the Athena Film Festival site. And next, I'm pleased to play this delightful interview I had last week with Judy Reyes, who's won 2 ALMA Awards for her portrayal of the feisty nurse Carla Espinosa on TV Scrubs. I caught Judy as she was getting ready to go to Sundance with her new film, Gun Hill Road, a very intense drama set in the Bronx. Proving her ability to do drama as well as comedy, Judy's role in this movie is a far cry from her amusing Scrubs character. She portrays a mother burdened by keeping her family afloat emotionally and financially as she tries to protect her son's secret sexual double life from a husband who has long been absent in prison and whose return she's really ambivalent about. We'll be joining the interview while Judy and I are talking about a Gun Hill Road clip I've seen. I haven't seen the movie, but I did see that particular clip. But as the interview continues, you'll hear Judy discuss some of her other acting appearances. Be sure to keep your ears open for her comments about working with Miss Piggy from The Muppets and about how a certain church talent show helped her realize she wanted to be in showbiz. Thanks to Nikki for doing such an excellent job editing this interview for our show. And here it is now. Saw a little clip of Gun Hill Road, and you and the wonderful Mr. Morales were playing man and wife in this little scene. And my goodness, it looks like such an intense, riveting movie. A drama, certainly there's no comedy connected with this. Am I right about it?
Well, I would say yes. I would say yes, that it's a very intense journey about intense moments in people's lives when you meet them. It's about trying to cope with having to rejoin a family that's been so devoted to each other, but having to cope with the inevitable change of having a father been gone and having to accept everything that's completely consumed them over the last years in his absence, and trying to hold on to a love that's inevitably been there all along, but now having to grow with what's been going on with what's holding them together, which is their child, you know.
Well, it sounds like a really interesting drama, and it is a very different type of role than what we have seen you in and loved you in Scrubs. And I thought in the press release that I received, I loved the description of the woman that you play, Angela,
mm-hmm.
long-suffering and smoldering. Hey.
Hey.
is that
ain't
pretty
fancy,
much
it's smoldering.
That's a great description for a character. And of course, Angela.
I think it's quite rather appropriate, I think, considering her loyalty to her family, if not her husband, her actual child, and trying to holding families together in these precarious and ever precarious times in an urban landscape, in a Latin landscape, and while, you know, trying to maintain loyalty to, you can only imagine, you know, the bonds of love that held them together all these times, and trying to stay true to, I guess, an initial dream, and just watching that wither away, and trying to maintain that level of passion and womanhood all at the same time.
Well, the little scene that I saw gave a peek into what you were up to as Angela. But do you see any similarities in? I know that they're very different types of women, but did you draw on any similarities between Angela and Carla in Scrubs? I kind of think there might be a hint of something in both of those women.
I would
women.
Say that's up to the viewer, and I can't
uh-huh.
possibly say that for myself, in as much as that I'm playing it.
Right, good answer.
But, you know, that's an inevitable comparison, but that would be up to the viewer, you know.
Well, I think it's wonderful that you can do so many different types of roles, and but I was wondering if you had any special preparation to play Angela.
You know, I had a God-given preparation in two ways, in that I'm born and raised in the Bronx, you know,
yes.
And that I had just become a mother. So I have 7 months.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much. My baby girl just turned 7 months when we all packed up. Her dad and myself went back to New York to do this film when I was fortunate enough to get this offer. And I was really excited to apply the bonds of, maternity to put them to use, in the combative nature of the husband and wife, and protectiveness that you'll be able to experience once you see this film, in the scenes that
I can't.
I think when you're in it. When you feel,
yes.
I guess, as if someone said to me, like, being a mom is having your heart walking around in front of you. And even though, because it's not to say that it is, although it's primarily a father-son tale, this film, I think you do witness Angela also struggling with her son's issues as much as he did, but she's 3 years in. So there's a bit of a stoic strength that you get to witness, and a bond of maternity that says, I think that I got is like, nothing will tear me away from this child, no matter how I may disapprove of or struggle or disagree with whatever may seem like a choice. You know what I'm saying? So it was. It was an introduction to an emotional world that I was unfamiliar with. It was just, you know, in that regard. And then I was very anxious to prepare as an actor because of having been in an environment where it was a comedic. I wanted to get my acting juices flowing, so I got into New York early, and I was fortunate enough to work with Rashad, the director, and Harmony Santana, who plays Michael. And Michael, I don't know if you read any of the press that was
yes,
completely...
Yes, the fan, right.
Right. So we got to work the script intensely before we actually got to shoot, because our shooting time was limited. So that was also the preparation that I got to. I got to talk to mothers of children who were going through similar sexual identity issues, and that was just so rewarding as well.
Well, it sounds like a film that both men and women will enjoy, and I was wondering if there's any type of important message that the film delivers.
I think people will relate to Michael's journey, Michael the character, as played by Harmony Santana, who does an outstanding job, as well as the parents' journey. I think that emotionally, it's a cringeworthy journey, and how pertinent it is to how you feel, at how everybody behaves. And how everybody feels, and everybody's journey, and the painful coming of age tale of Harmony's character Michael, and how judgmental and judge-worthy people's behavior and people's performances have been. So yeah, does that make sense?
I love that explanation and that message. It sounds like it's about people who don't give up on each other. Could that be also something
that the film emphasizes? And how they come around, and how no matter what the result may be, you know, it's never too late to come around. It's always a coming of age story for the person who's going through that journey, each individual.
Well, I just can hardly wait to see it. I hope you have time to answer a few questions just about yourself in general. I'm so curious to know how when you first knew that you wanted to be in showbiz.
I was always such a fan of, like you, movie musicals when I was a kid.
Soul Sisters.
Yeah, totally. I would watch them on TV way back before there was even VCRs. And they used to have, I grew up in New York City, as I said, in the Bronx, and they would have Academy Award Sundays. They would show, like, the movie, you know, Singing in the Rain, West Side Story, Casablanca, all the Academy Award nominated and winning musicals, and that was me glued to the TV. But I also loved sitcoms and series, you know, all the Aaron Spellings and the I Love Lucy's and all of that stuff. And that kind of forayed into, like, the independent cinema and the Cassavetes films and just a passion for viewing it, but I never saw I would dream of myself on the other side, but I never actually pursued it seriously until I got into college.
And I was checking up on you a little bit on Internet Movie Database, and they said that there was a church talent show that might have played a role in wanting to be a performer.
Although I dabbled into it until I did a talent show at church, my mom's church, where I both did a scene with my twin sister and a dance number, and I sang. It wasn't until that thing was over that I was just a buzz and tingling all over that I knew that this was where I came home. And this, you know, this, like, talent, all day talent shows, I don't know, the fucking thing is 8 hours long, and it felt like it was it was 5 minutes, and every time I did something, this place went up in flames. People gave me standing ovations. I just didn't know what to do with myself. And I got home and I was still like walking on air. And I told my mom, and I did shit in English and Spanish. It was just like I was on fire. And my mom's a singer as well, and she was part of the church choir, so she could relate to how that feels. And I got home, I was like, Mom, I know what I'm going to do with my life. What is it, sweetheart? What is it? I'm going to be an actress. And she laughed at me. She thought I was, you know, being a silly girl.
Oh, no.
And I was so fucking pissed. I was furious at her. And she's like, no, Julie, this picture, all this shit going down in Spanish, you know. And she said, Julie, please, no. You're going to be a teacher or a social worker. Don't do that. That's ridiculous. And I was just livid because I was sharing my epiphany with her, and she laughed at me. And I just, I'm going to do it. And I turned around, and I slammed my door. And you don't do that in a Dominican household. You don't slam doors or doors or anything. And I just slammed my door, and I turned around, and I was like, well, I'm going to do it. I was just, because this was my vision, and I really just never looked back. And I, you know, I started taking basic acting classes, and I took acting classes where I could take them, and HB Studio, and then I took some time off from school, and I got a restaurant job, because that's what you do when you're an actor. And then I met my manager at the restaurant that I worked in, because that's what happens when you're an actor. And then from there, I got, like, an indie film and a play at the same time, and I had to choose between those two. Like, that fucking thing happens. And my first indie film was with Sam Rockwell. It was both our first jobs, and you know, it was this little thing called Jack and His Friends. And I look back, I was terrible, and I was chubby, and who cares? It was my first movie. And then when I got back, I got a Law and Order, and then I got another thing in Vancouver, and then I didn't work for 2 years.
Oh my gosh! Well, speaking of the TV roles, you've been on, my gosh, practically every TV show that I can think of, especially some of my favorites, Castle and Law and Order and The Sopranos and NYPD Blue and Oz, and just it goes on and on. So you just really have a tremendous amount of experience in films. I noticed that you were in Bringing Out the Dead, and you played a nurse there, just like you played a nurse in Scrubs.
One line, and the very last scene of that was Martin Scorsese and Nicolas Cage.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was great. And you worked with the Muppets.
I did.
Oh, my gosh, you worked with
Muppets. I worked with Miss Piggy.
You worked with Miss Piggy.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And Miss Piggy, it's such an honor to meet you. And she goes, of course it is.
Of course it is. jealous of you, Judy. I'm just so you're living my dream.
I am. I'm living the dream. I cannot.
That is just great. And I was wondering too. I think you also worked in a movie with David Zayas, who's a friend of our show, because he was on the show and we had such a good time with him. He was talking about Dexter. So I think there was a movie
David
called Washington
one
High.
One of my oldest and dearest friends. He and I are both members of the Labyrinth Theater Company. We have been we're like one of the original founding members of
you
the
are.
Labyrinth Theater Company. Yeah, we've been members for over 18 years now. He's actually doing a
play. Wow. Well, when you see him, tell him that the folks at Blog at Movie Attic Headquarters say hello. We need to have him back soon. And you mentioned the Labyrinth Theater.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Labyrinth Theater Company was started out as the Latino Actors Base back when a bunch of us were kind of brainstorming as struggling actors in New York City, wondering why we as actors who trained and graduated school, a good chunk of us, were wondering why we're not doing Shakespeare or Ibsen or Tennessee Williams and you know, all the stuff that we were trained for in graduated school, and yet we're still getting thug roles and victim roles and hooker roles and stuff. So John Ortiz and Gary Perez and a bunch of other guys got together, and to make a very long story short, talked to Max Ferra, who ran INTAR, and they had their old theater space near the West Side Highway abandoned, rat-infested, but it had a stage and a bunch of seats. Instead of, can we borrow that and open up and start a theater collective? And put an ad in the trades, auditioned as many Latino actors looking as different as they possibly could, and they had to bring a scene partner. And in a lot of ways, we ended up casting into the theater company the scene partner over the actual actor, but it turned out to be a primarily Latino actors collective with a few other ethnicities involved. And obviously the vision expanded over the years. It became a multicultural acting collective, and that's why we changed the name from Latino Actors Base to Labyrinth, and became obviously a for-profit or acting space, and it's just become bigger. And about 6 years into it, Philip Seymour Hoffman joined us, and we've been having a blast and doing great things ever since.
Well, that sounds like a very worthwhile project to be involved in. I congratulate you on doing that also. And I understand that you have another film besides Gun Hill Road that we might be seeing soon. I love the title. It's called Without Men. Could you tell us a little bit about that, Judy?
Well, Without Men was a film that I shot just before Gun Hill Road. It's Christian Slater, Eva Longoria, who's also the star and producer of the film, and Kate Del Castillo, who was the star in another indie Sundance darling called La Misma Luna. And it's set in an unspecified time, unspecified Latin American town, based on the novel. I can't remember the writer. But it's a mythical time in a time long ago in a Latin American town where women completely dependent on their men. And they're invaded and either sent off to war or killed, and the women are left to fend for themselves without men, and they don't know what the hell to do. So Eva Longoria, who's the mayor's wife and the closest thing to power, says, well, I can run this town. And the women all either are terrified or mock her because they don't think that she can do it, and they think they're all going to die. And the place is dirty. The electricity doesn't work. Nobody knows how to milk the cows. It's just obviously a comedy. And in comes this stranger in the black hat, so to speak, dressed in black, kind of like a biker, in Kate Del Castillo, and comes in and pretty much helps these women learn how to take care of themselves and love themselves and kind of love each other. Some of them discover their own sexuality through other women and figure out how to run this town all on their own until the men return. And then what happens? Who knows?
sounds like a great
But it's all, it's
movie.
All, you know, it's satirical, obviously. It's a comedy, and it's very colorful. And Gabby, Gabby Tagliavini, who's she's won several film festivals, actually, in Latin America in particular, did, I think, a wildly funny take on it. Very farcical, and I'm looking forward to seeing it do well in some film festivals as well.
Oh, I hope so. I just wish I would be there at these festivals to see these films, because sometimes these are wonderful films that just don't get released, you know, nationwide. So
yeah, I think,
have to wait until
this year. It's really enjoying a resurgence in the excitement at film festivals. You know, I think that people were really concerned about the future of indie films over the last couple of years. But I think people are being excited again. I think because of like Hurt Locker and even Tarantino's film. What was it called? The war film?
You said Hurt Locker.
Even though it was a big budget film, it's just because of
his the
legendary
Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah.
What a great film that was. Well, do you have any advice for wannabe actors? Because you've managed to really build up a very, very wonderful career, and I think one that's going to get even bigger after this film that you're showing off in Sundance, and after Without Men. So
what advice? It feels like
it
just started yesterday, to be honest, because I've had such a good time. I always think of what Winston Churchill said, find something you love to do, and you'll never work another day in your life, you know, and that's really how it feels like to me, because I'm just having so much fun doing what I do, and it doesn't feel like work.
Well, Jazz, you can see why I enjoyed talking with Judy so much, can't you?
I was excited to hear it. I will say I was a little surprised. She's got a bit of spicy language for radio interviews, doesn't she?
Well, I was wondering if anyone would catch that. But she's very interesting to talk with, and we weren't able to play the entire interview, but we will, and Nikki wants us to be sure and play the part where she talks more about Scrubs, so we will do that in another show, because I know she has so many fans who want to hear her talk a little bit
more about
Scrubs.
Yeah, if you cut the rest of that
down
and get the Scrubs part, that would probably be good, too, even though it's not movies, it's TV, it was a tremendous series.
Yes, and she was so great in that. And I am happy to report that Gun Hill Road was a big hit at Sundance last week. It even picked up a distributor, and it looks like it will be released at least in New York City next summer, and then probably will be released in other cities after that. So that's kind of what Sundance is all about. They're there to kind of make deals and
that was
sure
my first question.
I was
wondering if they found a buyer, so that's good to hear.
Yeah, that's really, really good news. So I wonder if Nikki is back and with us, and whether or not there are some comments or concerns or questions from the chat that she'd like to share with us. Nikki, are you there?
She's there. I don't know if we can unmute her.
Oh, okay. Let's see if I can do that.
Well, she's yelling no, so...
She can't. Okay, well, how about you, Jazz? Are you in the chat room?
I am mostly in the chat room. We've been bouncing back and forth. She's complaining that the dogs are barking right now, so she can't be unmuted
okay.
right now. So.
Okay. Well, we're
now, there
sorry
were a
that we
number
didn't
of comments
have...
that were in favor of particularly Scrubs we were discussing. But the guest was great. It was a good interview, and I don't know. I'm curious to see what goes on. The first interview, the live one that we did before this, was even more interesting to me because I'm always curious about that. I don't know, but you're probably going to hate to hear me say this. I tend to dislike just a flat statement set up to say that society is set up into men and women, into black and white, into, you know, Catholics and Protestants and things like that, and you don't have a chance. But it is hard to argue that women were coming from the back of the pack in terms of film, and there was a lot of discrimination.
But I
am curious, you know, it's like in 2011, wouldn't you think that at this point, haven't we evolved far enough that the quality should be just rising to the top, regardless?
Exactly. And I think that's what Melissa is trying to do with her site, Women in Hollywood, and that her film festival, the Athena Film Festival, will be dealing with. So it was very interesting to hear the things that she was up to and some of the concerns that she had. But I do see that our usual 45 minutes time slot is about up. So I want to thank all of our listeners, our chatters, Nikki, Jazz, Demos, Melissa, Judy, and the folks at Blog Talk Radio for all their support. Please
I'll
come
warn
back
everybody
next
ahead of time.
Time.
You will have to get another co-host for next week, and I apologize for that. Next week could
all
be
right. Well, we
very
will,
busy,
we will miss-
and I'll be on the road for a couple things locally, and then I'll be down in Washington, D.C. for the following like 5 days after that. But I'll try to make it back the week after.
Well, we'll miss you, and we hope whatever you're doing will turn out well for you. So please come back next time, everybody, when our guest will be Patrick Fabian, the fascinating star of The Last Exorcism. He's also starring now, this just debuted January 28th, a very amusing CMT comedy called Working Class. So don't miss the show next week, because Patrick Fabian is a fascinating guy, and he's got about 73 films and television credits to his resume. So we'll have a lot of fun talking with him. In the meantime, don't you forget to check out our film reviews at realtalkreviews.com. And now here's A.J. Daniels to take us out with a song we dedicate to all our loyal listeners. Bye for now, everybody.
You must remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by.
Brian Ferry, not A.J. Daniels, but the song.
And when two lovers woo, they still say, I love you. On that you can rely. No matter what the future brings, as time goes by. Moonlight and love songs. Never out of date. Hearts full of passion, jealousy and hate. Woman needs man, and man must have his mate. That no one can deny. It's still the same old story. A fight for love and glory. A case of do or die. Always welcome lovers as time goes by. Same old story, a fight for love and glory, a case of do or die. The world will always welcome lovers as time goes by.